Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. I am genuinely excited about today's material.
Me too.
We're tackling this single most fundamental human invention, or maybe it's not an invention, maybe it's a human trait.
Language. It's the operating system we use, you know, every waking second. And yet most of us only ever interact with it on a really surface level.
Right. And we're not talking about like learning French vocabulary here.
No, not at all. We are dissecting the sheer invisible cognitive architecture that lets us communicate and think and really structure our reality.
Exactly. For this deep dive, we immersed ourselves in Stephen R. Anderson's essential book, Languages. A very short introduction.
And if you need a shortcut to understanding the unbelievable unconscious complexity that powers your ability to form a sentence right now, this is it.
It really is.
So our mission today is to move past those restrictive old school ideas about grammar.
Mm-hmm. And reveal language as what it is. A biological rule-governed system that's just hardwired into our brains. It's one of the best windows we have into the human mind.
And the stakes are high, especially today. Anderson makes it so clear.
Yeah.
Once you truly appreciate the sophistication of every language on Earth, the rapid loss of linguistic diversity becomes, well, it becomes incredibly urgent.
We have over 7,000 languages.
And so many are disappearing, you know, due to cultural homogenization. They're taking unique knowledge systems with them. What we lose is, I mean, it's comparable to losing a species.
So let's introduce the expert who's guiding us through this architecture.
Let's do it.
Stephen R. Anderson is a highly distinguished American linguist, mm-hmm. a professor emeritus of linguistics at Yale University. He spent his whole career on the scientific side of this field.
So he didn't just study languages, plural.
No.
He studied language, singular. He got his PhD from MIT, and his work spans everything from how we organize sounds to how we build meaning.
Syntax. Yeah. Yeah. He's a foundational figure in modern linguistic science.
So what makes his perspective so distinctive?
Well, it's his key role in the tradition of generative grammar.
Right. The one pioneered by Noam Chomsky.
Exactly. And that school of thought isn't just interested in, you know, cataloging all the sentences people say.
No, it's deeper.
It's focused on figuring out the innate universal principles, the hidden blueprint that lets a child just instantly generate new correct sentences they've never heard before.
So if most people think of language as like a giant list of rules you memorize in school.
Like a car's owner's manual.
Right, exactly. Anderson and this tradition are focusing on the biological engine under the hood. It's the capacity for language that's hardwired.
Making it part of our biology, not just some cultural add-on.
And that's his genius, isn't it?
Yeah.
His ability to take these technically dense ideas, the kind you'd normally need a whole semester for, and just present them in clear, accessible terms.
Which is exactly why this deep dive is so valuable.
Okay, so let's look at the core purpose of the book. Anderson wants us to fundamentally reframe how we view language study.
Yeah, moving away from prescriptive rules.
The shits.
And towards descriptive inquiry.
Okay, let's break that down. Think of your high school English teacher.
Mm-hmm.
They were being prescriptive, telling you how you should speak.
Huh.
Don't split infinitives.
Never end a sentence with a preposition. All of that. The linguist, though, is being descriptive. They're just observing how native speakers actually structure sentences.
And even the non-standard ones.
Especially those, because linguistics is a science of observation.
I like the analogy of a food critic versus a biologist.
Ooh, yeah.
The critic gives a review, a prescription. The biologist studies the nutritional content. They're just interested in what is, not what should be.
And this observational approach leads to the central, most liberating thesis of the book.
Which is?
That human language is a complex, rule-governed cognitive system that is biologically fundamental.
And the most critical part.
It possesses infinite generativity.
Our ability to produce and understand a limitless number of new sentences we've never, ever encountered before.
That's the engine of human creativity right there. And the book breaks this down layer by layer.
Starting small with sounds, building up to words and sentences, and then zooming out to how the brain processes all of it.
And he stresses one crucial takeaway that really challenges conventional wisdom.
Which is that there's no such thing as a primitive language.
Exactly. Every language in the world, whether it's English or Mandarin or a language spoken by a tiny tribe somewhere, is equally sophisticated and complex.
All of them are equally capable of expressing any human thought.
Totally.
That's a radical thought for so many people who judge complexity by, like, vocabulary size or having a writing system.
Right. Okay, so let's unpack that structure, starting at the lowest level, the sounds themselves. Anderson begins with phonetics and phonology.
And the foundation here is the phoneme.
Which isn't just a sound, it's the smallest abstract sound unit that, when you swap it, changes the meaning.
Like you said before, swapping P for B changes pat to bat. That distinction is meaningful in English.
But here's where the hidden structure really comes in. The allophone.
This I found fascinating. Think of the P sound in the word pin versus the P in spin.
Okay.
Say them out loud. In pin, you get a burst of air. It's aspirated.
Pin.
But in spin, you don't.
Spin. You're right. They are physically different sounds.
But if you switch them, you wouldn't change the meaning of the word. Your brain just, it doesn't care.
Precisely. There are just allophonic variations, different ways of saying the same abstract phone P. The brain recognizes them as the same unit of meaning, even if the physics of the sound wave are different.
Which shows that even sounds are highly structured, following these unconscious rules.
So moving up the architecture, we get to morphology.
The study of word formation.
Right. And just as sounds break down into phonemes, words break down into morphemes, the smallest meaningful components.
Let's use that classic linguistic example.
Unbelievably.
If you break that down, you find four morphemes, and each one carries meaning.
You have une, which is negation.
Believe, the root.
Then able, which makes it an adjective.
And abesly, which turns it into an adverb.
So the internal logic of that word is actually not able to believe in an adverbial way.
It's like a grammatical calculation we do instantly.
And we distinguish here between free morphemes, which can stand alone as words like believe, and bound morphemes like un or elidly, which have to attach to something else.
Right.
And now we hit the powerhouse. Syntax.
And then structure. This is where the generativity really takes off.
The core insight is that sentences are not just words in a line.
No, they have a hierarchical, tree-like structure.
He calls it constituency. Now, for a non-linguist, that sounds very technical.
It does. Can we give an analogy that helps visualize this?
Absolutely. Think of it like organizing Legos or maybe shipping containers. Hmm. When you have a complex phrase like the tall man from the village, your brain doesn't process six individual items.
It clumps them together.
Exactly. It processes that whole thing as one big constituent, one noun phrase that acts as a single unit. It's an internal organizational block.
And that organizational block is what allows for the next most famous concept.
Recursion.
The Russian nesting dolls of language.
That's the perfect way to put it. It's the ability to embed a structure inside itself. And this is the principle that grants language its infinite generative capacity.
So the classic example is embedding sentences.
John said that Mary thought that the dog knew that.
You can just keep going forever, theoretically, and the sentence stays grammatically correct.
It's a simple rule, but it yields limitless complexity.
And Anderson shows this isn't just abstract theory, it's physical.
Right. Chapter 7, Neurolinguistics, the physical location of language in the brain. He reviews the classic case studies.
Broca's area.
Associated with production and grammar.
And Wernicke's area.
Which is associated with comprehension.
And damage to those specific regions leads to these really specific language deficits.
Aphasias.
Aphasias, right. You might have someone who understands perfectly, but struggles to form a coherent sentence.
Or the other way around. And this is strong physical evidence that language is a distinct, hardwired cognitive faculty, separate from just general intelligence.
Okay, so from structure to meaning. Chapter 5 explores semantics and pragmatics.
Anderson emphasizes that meaning goes way beyond simple dictionary definitions.
Dog bites man versus man bites dog. Same three words.
But the syntactic structure completely inverts the meaning.
But pragmatics is where human communication gets really interesting and fuzzy.
Meaning in context.
Right. If I'm at your house and I say, wow, it's really drafty in here, I'm not just describing the temperature.
Right. You are performing an implicature. You're suggesting, please close the window without actually saying it.
It's that unconscious negotiation of intent. If a machine can't grasp that, it fails to truly communicate.
And Anderson highlights the sheer diversity, those 7,000 languages. He briefly touches on the famous case of the Pirahan language.
In the Amazon, yeah. Some researchers claim it lacks certain features.
possibly even recursion or fixed number terms.
And that debate is healthy for the field, right?
Mm.
It shows linguists are constantly testing the boundaries of universal grammar.
Totally. But the takeaway remains that for the overwhelming majority of human languages, the rules are highly complex, systematic, and fully capable of handling every nuance of human experience.
The book also reminds us that language is a dynamic living thing. Chapter 6 on language change is crucial.
And he emphasizes that change is inevitable and, importantly, it is not decay.
We so often think of changes in grammar as mistakes.
He fights that perception hard. Change is natural adaptation. He gives great examples like the great vowel shift in English hundreds of years ago.
Totally changed pronunciation.
Or the gradual loss of the complex case endings that Old English used to have. Languages simplify in some areas and get more complex in others. They're constantly optimizing.
So this whole deep dive, it fundamentally shifts how you view communication. Let's focus on the key themes that should alter how you interact with language every day.
The first and most critical one is the primacy of descriptivism over prescriptivism.
Okay.
Once you accept that the linguist is a scientist studying the system as it operates, you immediately start to dismantle linguistic prejudice.
So if I hear someone speaking a non-standard dialect, say a specific regional accent,
or African-American vernacular English,
I should ditch that ingrained instinct to label it as bad grammar or lazy speech.
Absolutely. Anderson stresses these dialects are not broken or lazy. They are fully systematic, rule-governed systems.
They just follow different rules.
Different rules than the prestige dialect used in schools and media. Respecting diversity means recognizing systematic complexity, no matter the social status.
Theme 2, the primacy of speech over writing. This is key.
Speech is innate, biological. It's acquired universally by children without any formal instruction.
But writing. Writing is a learned technology, mm-hmm. a cultural layer applied later.
And this explains so much. It explains why every child masters spoken language by age 4, but learning to read and write takes years of really hard formal education.
We are built to speak, but we have to be taught to write.
Exactly.
Theme 3 gets into the arbitrariness of the linguistic sign.
Which is foundational. It means the sound of a word has no inherent connection to what it means.
There's nothing inherently dog-like about the sound deg in English.
Or chant in French. And this arbitrariness is what necessitates the immense complexity of morphology and syntax we talked about.
I hope so.
Because the sounds are random, the system has to be incredibly structured to maintain coherence. If the sound was connected to the meaning, you wouldn't need such complex rules to put them all together.
That makes sense. And finally, theme 4, the idea of language as a cultural repository.
Every unique language encodes unique ways of understanding and organizing the world.
How we define colors, categorize family members, describe space.
Which leads to a really staggering reflection. The loss of any one language is an irreversible loss of human intellectual knowledge.
It's a tragedy, like the destruction of a fragile ecosystem.
Anderson wraps up these intense technical ideas with some really memorable, almost poetic summaries that just, they stick with you.
He does. One core idea he paraphrases is this. Every language is a 1,000-year-old experiment in how to organize human thought and communication.
It's a living museum of accumulated wisdom and cognitive strategy.
That instantly generates so much respect for every single language, no matter how few speakers it has.
Another powerful sentiment he conveys is that the diversity of human languages is not a barrier to overcome, but a treasure to celebrate and preserve.
Which challenges that frequent political desire to unify under one common language.
And maybe the most urgent one, which we've touched on. When a language dies, a unique way of understanding the world dies with it.
The loss is a loss of unique human cognitive potential.
So how can you use this newly acquired linguistic knowledge in your daily life?
Well, the most immediate application is in overcoming linguistic prejudice.
Absolutely. Understanding the descriptive approach helps you recognize that someone's accent or dialect. It isn't a marker of stupidity or education level.
It's just a marker of social, geographic, or cultural history.
And that's the essential prerequisite for genuine intellectual tolerance.
It also directly improves your own communication skills. Understanding syntactic ambiguity, that tree structure, helps you write clearer emails, clearer reports.
You understand how a sentence can be structurally misinterpreted, you become a much better writer.
And in our current technological climate, this foundational knowledge is essential for informed tech engagement.
Right. If you understand how many layers of rules exist, phonology, morphology, syntax, and pragmatics, you appreciate both the complexity and the current limits of AI and natural language processing.
We see these breakthroughs in NLP and think AI has mastered language, but they still struggle so deeply with context and implicature.
The technology is often just good at massive pattern matching, not true human generativity.
We should also take some hope from the practical examples Anderson provides.
Like the Hawaiian language revitalization efforts.
Exactly. This shows that language death is not inevitable. With focused community effort and innovative education, language loss can be reversed.
You just have to recognize that the resource is worth saving.
As we close out, I keep returning to what I found most startling from his work.
What's that?
The sheer cognitive miracle of child language acquisition. The poverty of the stimulus argument.
That's the idea that children hear messy, incomplete speech data, right?
They hear people stutter, correct themselves, say ungrammatical things.
Mm.
And yet, they still filter that chaotic data and construct a perfect, fully complex grammatical system in their minds without any formal lessons.
It demonstrates they aren't learning the rules from scratch.
They're born with the universal architectural blueprint. The environment just sets the specific parameters for English or Japanese or whatever.
Mm.
It really solidifies the idea that language is our biological destiny.
For me, the lasting lesson is that fundamental paradigm shift. We have to stop judging languages hierarchically. We have to view all 7,000 languages as equally complex, equally capable, and equally deserving of scientific study and cultural respect.
To study language is to study the very essence of human potential.
It really is.
That's a powerful place to end. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the hidden architecture of human language. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.